A young, innocent, sheltered girl meets her first love. She falls for him madly and deeply. She's willing to risk everything for this love, even her life. A married but lecherous nobleman who thinks that his power and privilege entitle him to have any woman of his choosing, regardless of their age, background, or marital status. A single, overprotective father tries to shield his beloved daughter from the pains and pleasures of the outside world. A world that shuns him because of his disability, but celebrates him when, armed with charm, a sharp tongue, and a wicked sense of humor, he transforms himself into a court jester. He makes a mockery of those who fall victim to the nobleman's insatiable appetite. But fate and a curse intervene. Worlds collide and tragedy strikes. I'm Roderick Hawkins. I am the Associate Dean of External Affairs and Chief of Staff at Northwestern University School of Communication. It is my pleasure to offer commentary about Giuseppe Verdi's Rigoletto, with libretto by Francesco Maria Piave, based on a play by Victor Hugo. Lyric's opera commentaries are sponsored by the Patrick G. and Shirley W. Ryan Foundation in memory of their parents. I am often asked who my favorite opera composer is, and while I don't necessarily have a favorite, I love the wonderful orchestrations, the beautiful singing, and the high drama of many of Verdi's operas. I fell in love with opera when I was 12 or 13 years old. I was so drawn to this powerful art form that I even considered a career as a singer and, for a brief time, studied voice at Louisiana State University in my hometown of Baton Rouge. It was during this time that I made it my business to study black opera singers who built major careers. I found plenty of inspiration, and of those I studied, I often found myself drawn to their interpretations of Verdi roles, be it Marian Anderson in Un ballo in maschera, or Leontine Price in Il Trovatore or Aida, or Robert McFerrin, who, in 1956, became the first black man to sing a title role at the Metropolitan Opera. That role was Rigoletto. When it comes to high drama, some people like to witness individuals behaving badly on reality television or on social media, or just watching the 24-hour news cycle during an election season. And while all those mediums provide more than enough chaos, calamity, and on occasion, entertainment, I would much rather spend time in an opera house experiencing the triumphs, tragedies, joys, and sorrows that many Verdi operas deliver. And does Rigoletto ever deliver? In three acts that last less than 3 hours, Verdi lays it all out there. Love, sex, scandal, jealousy, revenge, and murder. And to think, this opera almost never saw the light of day. But we'll get to that a little later. Let's first talk about the state of affairs and Verdi's personal life while he was working on Rigoletto. Verdi was in his late 30s when he was commissioned to do this opera. He was well known for his musical genius and had experienced his share of triumphs and flops on the operatic stage. But the young Verdi had also experienced unimaginable tragedy. According to biographers, he lost his younger sister when she was only 17 years old. His first marriage to Margherita Barezzi only lasted 4 years. During that time, the couple welcomed 2 children, a girl and a boy. Both children died as infants while Verdi was working on his first opera, and the losses didn't end there. Margherita died of encephalitis while the composer was working on his second opera. Born only a few months apart, husband and wife were only 26 years old at the time of Margherita's death in 1840. There is no doubt that these terrible losses found their way into Verdi's art. Moving ahead to 1850, Verdi had found love again with soprano Giuseppina Strepponi. She had gained fame for her exciting performances and infamy for having children out of wedlock. But none of that mattered to Verdi. In fact, Verdi was so much in love with Strepponi that they lived together at his estate. News of the couple living together, or shacking up, as it was called when I was growing up, caused a great scandal. Verdi and Strepponi were subjected to vicious gossip and, in some cases, public ridicule. It must also be noted here that in addition to his own scandal, Giuseppe Verdi was also on the brink of cutting his parents out of his life. In fact, he began what he later described as emancipating himself from his parents while working on Rigoletto. Despite all the turmoil and drama in his personal life, Verdi persevered and gave us a masterpiece. Now to the story of Rigoletto. This tragic tale begins in the palace of the Duke of Mantua, where the Duke, longing to be with his newest love interest he's seen in church, simultaneously declares that he can pursue any woman of his choosing. One of those women, a countess, arrives at the Duke's court with her husband. The Duke openly flirts with the countess, while the court jester, Rigoletto, makes fun of her husband. Unbeknownst to Rigoletto, courtiers, who only tolerate Rigoletto because he makes them laugh, begin gossiping that he has a mistress hidden away. In truth, it's his daughter. The men decide to play a trick on Rigoletto as payback for his mockery. Suddenly, a nobleman named Monteron storms in and denounces and curses the Duke for seducing, then abandoning his daughter. When Rigoletto cruelly taunts Monteron, he places a curse on Rigoletto. Let's take a moment to talk about curses. Verdi incorporated curses into several of his operas. The original title of Rigoletto was La Maledizione, or The Curse. Throughout recorded history, there are examples of curses being placed on individuals, families, and communities. Curses make their way into fairy tales and folklore. Curses even make their way into pop culture. Lest we forget the curses the characters Sophia, picture it Sicily, Petrillo, placed and those she fought against on the popular 1980s sitcom The Golden Girls. Or the iconic Until You Do Right By Me curse the character Celie places on her abusive husband in the novel, film, and stage adaptations of Alice Walker's The Color Purple. For many people, regardless of geography, culture, or background, curses are real and should be taken seriously. And in this opera, our lead character takes the curse placed on him to heart and spends the remainder of the opera trying and failing to reverse the curse. Back to the action. Troubled by Monteron's curse, Rigoletto rushes home to his daughter Gilda. On the way, he encounters a shady character, Sparafucile, an assassin for hire. Rigoletto dismisses Sparafucile's offer of services, but reflects that they both have careers that involve cutting people down, one with humor, the other with a knife. Finally home, Rigoletto warns his daughter Gilda to never leave the house except to attend church, and to never talk to strangers. We learn that Gilda only goes outside to attend church. We also learn that Gilda has not told her father that she has been flirting with and has fallen head over heels in love with the Duke, whose identity she doesn't even know. In a way, Gilda does not fully know her own history. Rigoletto has withheld information on everything, from knowledge of her family, her mother, and even her own family name. While some may ask why Gilda keeps this huge secret from her father, I think that this is a moment of agency for her. Gilda has not been able to have any secrets to herself, nor has been given a real opportunity to live outside the suffocating walls of her father's protection. Can we blame a teenage girl for intentionally hiding a crush and her chance to create a life beyond her father? In fact, in this production, our director, Mary Birnbaum, who is making her lyric debut, has been intentional about giving Gilda more voice, more power, and more agency. During the scene between Gilda and Rigoletto, the Duke is lurking outside Rigoletto's house, where he has been following Gilda home for weeks. He overhears the conversation between Rigoletto, Gilda, and their housekeeper, Giovanna. He's surprised to learn that his court jester, who lives with a spinal disorder, has a child. Nevertheless, he sneaks into the house and declares his love for Gilda. But he lies about his identity, telling her that he's a poor student named Gaultier Malde. Their encounter is brief, but it lasts long enough for Gilda to boldly proclaim her rapturous love for the caro nome, or the dear name of the man she has fallen for. I may be biased, but I believe that Caro Nome is one of the most beautiful arias in all of opera. It paints a gorgeous picture of young love and all the possibilities that it promises. It is a beautiful duet between orchestra and the soprano portraying Gilda. In addition to fantastic coloratura singing, we get love, desire, and rapture in this moment. But we also get a foreboding theme of what's to become of Gilda. Here's an excerpt from Caro Nome, performed by soprano Reri Grist, from a 1968 recording of Rigoletto from the Opera House of Rome, conducted by Francesco Molinari Pradelli. While Gilda is basking in the glow of her first love, the courtiers are outside, in disguise, preparing to abduct her, thinking that she is Rigoletto's mistress. Rigoletto happens upon them, and they lead him to believe that they are actually abducting the married countess that the Duke was flirting with earlier at his palace. Rigoletto joins the treachery, but later learns that he was an active participant in his beloved daughter's abduction. He is devastated and believes that Monterone's curse is unfolding. Act Two begins with the philandering Duke, thinking that Gilda has been stolen from him, having a brief moment of vulnerability. He admits that Gilda actually made him want to consider being faithful to one woman. I should remind you that the Duke already has a wife. She is interestingly omitted from the drama of this opera. In this production, we see her represented on a fresco on the wall, a voiceless piece of art that unfortunately observes her husband's misdeeds. Once the Duke learns that Gilda has been delivered to him by the scheming courtiers as payback to Rigoletto, he goes to her in his chamber. Rigoletto arrives, feigns indifference, but eventually pleads with the courtiers to let him see his beloved Gilda, who has been seduced by the Duke. They refuse, and he denounces the men who have made it clear that while he is a part of their court, he is just a jester. He is beneath them and is kept around solely for their entertainment. The master of mockery has become the mocked. With the weight of the curse closing in on him, Rigoletto spirals further into despair and pleads for his daughter's return. In the aria, Cortigiani Virazza Dannata, or Courtesan Vile Damned Race, Rigoletto is broken and reduced to begging the very people he pokes fun at for mercy for him and his daughter. Let's listen to baritone Cornell McNeil as Rigoletto in the 1968 recording. You can hear the pain in his voice. Rigoletto has reached his breaking point. The one thing he holds precious, his beloved daughter, has not only been stolen from him, but she's in the arms of a man who thrives on taking advantage of women. While he has had many opportunities to make jokes at the expense of those supposedly beneath the Duke's status, the punchline has soured now that the one person he loves most is within the Duke's grasp. When he is reunited with Gilda, Rigoletto is shocked to learn that despite the abduction and having her innocence stolen by the Duke, Gilda declares that she is in love with him. She even asks her father to forgive the Duke. But the only things on Rigoletto's mind are the curse and revenge. He later seeks out the assassin Sparafucile at his inn, where he lives with his sister Maddalena. Rigoletto pays him to kill the Duke. But things don't go as planned. After all, this is a Verdi opera. Much has been said and written about Rigoletto. One of the things I find most fascinating is the creative journey that brought this opera to the stage. It was almost as dramatic as what we will witness on stage. In 1850, Giuseppe Verdi was commissioned by the La Fenice Opera Company of Venice to compose a new opera. He and his librettist Francesco Maria Piave settled on Victor Hugo's play La Roi s'amuse, or The King Amuses Himself. But there was a problem. The play, which depicted a philandering king, based on Francis I of France, was so scandalous that it had been banned upon its premiere years earlier. Yes, there was a time when it was forbidden to create art that called out immoral, philandering, felonious leaders of countries. My, how the times have changed. Once word hit the streets that Verdi was working on this opera, the battle with the censors began. According to Verdi experts, he and Piave went through a lengthy and dramatic back and forth with censors. But Verdi stood his ground. In one of his letters to Piave, complaining about the censors' request, Verdi said the following. I must note that the context was before much more inclusive language became the norm. Verdi said, "Do they think they know better than I? I see the hero has been made no longer ugly and hunchback. Why? A singing hunchback? Why not? I think it is splendid to show this character as outwardly deformed and ridiculous, and inwardly passionate and full of love. I chose the subject for these very qualities. If they are removed, I can no longer set it to music. Another aspect of the creation of Rigoletto that I find compelling is the music marketing genius of Verdi. According to music critic, author, and Evanston, Illinois native Olin Downs, Verdi enforced an 1851 version of a non-disclosure agreement with the musicians and the leads of the world premiere of Rigoletto, especially celebrated tenor Raphael Mirate, who portrayed the Duke of Mantua. Mirate was forbidden from singing the Act III aria La Donna e Mobile outside of rehearsal. He couldn't even whistle it to himself while walking around town. Verdi wanted no one to hear his music until opening night. His gamble paid off. According to Downs, La Donna e Mobile was so well received that opera patrons were singing it in the streets of Venice the day after the world premiere. Here, from 1968, is Nicolai Guetta as the Duke.
La donna è mobile, qual fiume al vento, musa d'accento e di pensiero, sempre una mobile, leggiadro viso, il pianto è riso e menzognero. La donna è mobile, qual fiume al vento,
despite its cynical, sexist, and misogynistic lyrics, La Donna e Mobile has stood the test of time. It's a showpiece for tenors who have the chops for it. I'm sure you've heard it in a commercial or on a movie soundtrack. Perhaps you've sung it to yourself or hummed it in the shower. Or, like me, you've seen a video from 1994 where, at a benefit concert in Carnegie Hall, hosted by the great Luciano Pavarotti, he convinced pop music icons Elton John, Sting, and Whitney Houston to join him in a performance of the aria. Elton John and Sting were visibly shaken to be singing one of Pavarotti's signature arias alongside him. But Whitney Houston, my favorite diva, delivered the goods. I encourage you to find the footage on YouTube and join in the fun of the enduring legacy of Rigoletto. Lyric Opera of Chicago has its own rich legacy of Rigoletto performances, and this production continues to build on that. Our stellar cast is led by baritone Igor Golovatenko as Rigoletto. Making their eagerly anticipated lyric opera debuts are soprano Mane Galoyan as Gilda, tenor Javier Camarena as the Duke of Mantua, and baritone Andrew Manea as Monteron. Mezzo-soprano Myra Therese Carmack makes her lyric debut as Giovanna. Lyric opera favorite Solomon Howard brings his booming bass to the role of Sparafucile. And in the role of Maddalena is mezzo-soprano Zoe Reams. And I would be remiss if I were not to share that, like me, Zoe is a proud Chicago Southsider who studied voice at Louisiana State University. Go Tigers! Our cast also includes Patrick G. and Shirley W. Ryan Opera Center Ensemble members Trayvon D. Walker, Sankara Haruna, Christopher Humbert Jr., Adia Evans, and Gemma Nia. Joining director Mary Birnbaum are set designer Robert Ennis Hopkins, our costume designer is Jane Greenwood, and our lighting designer is Dwayne Schuler. Michael Black is our chorus director, And our conductor is lyric opera music director and Verdi devotee, Maestro Enrique Mazzola. Whether this is your first Rigoletto or one of many productions, I believe that you will be moved by this performance. Our director, Mary Birnbaum, has breathed new life into this 19-year-old production, sharply examining a piece where women are largely rendered voiceless within the misogyny of the Duke's court. As in life, these women are always part of the story, even when they are silenced. I mentioned the Duchess of Mantua's fresco painting earlier, but Gilda's mother appears in this production as a silent ghost, willfully present, even though her name has been forgotten. With its political and social themes and subject matter, including abduction, sexual assault, class and privilege, and murder, there is a reason that this opera continues to be performed 173 years after its world premiere. I believe that Rigoletto, like many works of art, is a mirror of the real world. It reflects on us, and if we're lucky, makes us take a brutally honest look at our flaws and shortcomings as humans. And if we're really lucky, it encourages us to treat ourselves and each other better. But that is for you to decide. For now, prepare yourselves to enjoy Lyric Opera of Chicago's 2024-2025 season opening production of Giuseppe Verdi's Rigoletto.